Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. We are celebrating a bye week, Jeff. Not an off week, a bye week. So how did your bye weekend go with no Penn State football?
Oh, it was quite a celebration, Jim. We popped the champagne corks and just kept it flowing all day long. No, it was kind of fun, to be honest, to sit back and see some of the other action and kind of take in some of the games. It was a great day for college football, a lot of great games that came right down to the wire. And I think, at the end of the day, for me, the big takeaway is, you're not going to believe this, Jim, I think the two big games for Penn State this year are going to end up being Ohio State and Michigan.
Stop the presses. We have a scoop. Well, you know, we've been saying that probably since the end of the Rose Bowl last year, when Penn State beat Utah. And since then, it's been okay. We know there's 10 W's in the win column. We've got two games to worry about. And, you know, towards that end, I'm with you, Jeff. On Saturday, for me, it was kind of a fun day just watching college football. And I'm not going to say without a rooting interest, because it's hard for me to watch a game without, you know, flipping it on and saying, okay, this is the team I'm going to root for. And sometimes it has no meaning. It's Maryland played Ohio State. I got to admit, that was the game that I was most focused on. And I had that the internal argument, who should I be rooting for here? Every instinct in my body says root for Maryland over Ohio State. But from a Penn State perspective, would it not be better for Ohio State to win, you know, creating that Penn State versus Ohio State, both teams unbeaten, the win would mean more?
Yeah, there's no question. And at the end of the day, right, if you're Penn State right now, you're wanting to be able to knock off two higher-ranked teams. And no matter how impressive Maryland could have been, they were not going to jump Penn State in the polls, even if they had surprised Ohio State. So I think at the end of the day, it did work out well for Penn State. I think, you know, Maryland obviously did a good job, got off to a good start. I just think Ohio State is a good football team, and over the course of four quarters, it's hard to stay up with them. And I thought, you know, Tagovailoa had made some mistakes, and he's obviously a terrific quarterback. But if you can get pressure on him, and you can keep that pressure on him, I think you can force some mistakes. And I do think, at the end of the day, Maryland is a really good team, but I do think there's that separation right now in the Big Ten, as we suspected from the start of the season, between the so-called Big Three, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, and the rest of the field. And I do think that game kind of demonstrated it. And again, it doesn't mean Maryland couldn't put it all together and have one fantastic day against a Penn State or a Michigan if those teams are off. But, you know, week in and week out, again, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, one of those three teams is going to win the conference. And I think at least one of those three is going to end up in the college football playoffs this year.
Here was my takeaway from the game. And I don't think Ohio State is as good as they have been in the past. I don't think Maryland is as bad as they have been in the past. They're better than before. But at the end of the day, Ohio State is still Ohio State, and Maryland is still Maryland.
Yeah, the one thing I do think that the other big takeaway for me is, I think this is a year where Penn State, and it's been a while since I think you could say this, I think Penn State should be able to outrush Ohio State. Like, that is now an expectation I have going into that game after watching the matchup yesterday between Saturday between Ohio State and Maryland. And I think Penn State, you know, if it can get its ground game going effectively and consistently, can actually do much what Ohio State did to Maryland to the Buckeyes, and that is just kind of grind out a win and wear them down over the course of four quarters. Now, we'll see if that pans out to be true, but I like where Penn State's at in terms of that particular matchup, and we've been saying that probably since the Rose Bowl last year too, that you know, of Ohio State and Michigan, again, no great revelation, but I do think Penn State matches up really well with Ohio State, maybe not quite as well with Michigan.
Okay, speaking of Michigan, they had a dominant win. Michigan, through the early part of the season, they were playing these tomato cans. You couldn't learn anything from it. I'm now beginning to believe, okay, Michigan is the dominant team. And if we put together the pecking order of Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, probably you got to give Michigan not just the benefit of the doubt because of the wins the last 2 years, but the way they're playing this year, that appears to be the best team.
Yeah, I think right now it's hard to argue that when you look at, obviously, the fact that they've been the Big Ten champion the last couple of seasons and have been able to beat Ohio State. But I think they have their most complete team yet. We've been talking about Penn State. I think clearly the Nittany Lions have their most complete team under James Franklin. But I do think this is Jim Harbaugh's most complete Wolverines team. You know, they had a couple of pick sixes in that game against Minnesota. And listen, Minnesota is quickly becoming a train wreck here. So, you know, it's not that I think this is a monumental, impressive victory by Michigan. But the fact is they've got a great offensive line. They have, for the last couple of years, been able to bludgeon Penn State and many others with that run game. I think, if anything, their running game is even better this year. I think they've improved the pass game, and I think that defense is as good as ever. I just think Michigan is a complete football team right now. And as we sit here right now, I think Michigan is a little better than Penn State. But again, on a given day, and between now and then, you know, an injury here or there, an improvement by a player or two for Penn State. And, you know, it's not that I think there's a wide gap there. But to be honest with you, Jim, to this point in the season, I actually think, and I hear you in terms of Michigan really has not played, you know, another top 10 team or anything. I just think they're the most complete football team right now in the country, the most complete that I've seen anyway. And, you know, again, I don't think there's any team in college football that's unbeatable, but I do think Michigan right now, to me, is the most complete team in college football.
That's probably the best way to put it, that they are the most complete team. And next, I want to stay in the Big Ten, Jeff. And one of the most amazing things to me is if we go to the West part of the Big Ten, which it's just crazy, but are you aware Iowa is 5-1? They played Penn State. They don't play Michigan. They don't play Ohio State. They do play Wisconsin, which is probably going to be the deciding game in the Big Ten West. But if Iowa could beat Wisconsin, which I think is possible, that could be an 11-1 team.
It is hard to get. Yes, I agree, and it is hard for me to get my mind around that possibility because now, that being said, I also don't think it's going to happen. Even if Iowa beats Wisconsin, I just think they will stumble somewhere else along the way at least one other time. I think it's going to be I'll be very surprised, let me put it that way, if the winner of the Big Ten West does not have at least two losses, and I won't be surprised if we're looking at a three-loss team ultimately coming out of the Big Ten West. I just think there's a lot of, I guess you'd call it parity there, a lot of mediocrity is probably a better way to put it right now in the Big Ten West.
I'll go more with mediocrity, but it brings up, and it's going to be a theme throughout our show, and where the schedule for these teams is amazing. And in the Big Ten East, you know, poor Maryland or even Indiana or Rutgers having to go through Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, and let's say you're Rutgers, you also have to play Maryland, which I think is a pretty good team despite that final score against Ohio State. And here you have Iowa who plays one of these teams. That was Penn State. It was a loss. And my goodness, if they could just reach the point where they score 20 points a game, they could win the Big Ten West.
Yeah. The other thing that is interesting is that, you know, Iowa's only lost to Penn State. Another team that I think just from a, I guess, strength of schedule standpoint, and listen, Penn State at the end of the day, the strength of schedule takes care of itself, obviously, with Ohio State and Michigan. So it's not something I think you actually need to be overly concerned about in terms of the rankings and everything for Penn State. But, you know, Iowa, as you said, is certainly in the running to go 11-1. West Virginia, which obviously Penn State ended up winning fairly comfortably in that over in that opener. If you look at the remainder of their schedule, they have the big game at Oklahoma, and obviously after Oklahoma's win over Texas, that looks like a huge challenge for West Virginia. But there's not another game on their remaining schedule, Jim, that you say, yep. In fact, I don't know that there's another game that they won't be favored in. They're at Houston. They're home with Oklahoma State. They're at Central Florida. They're home with BYU. And then again, they're at Oklahoma, but then home with Cincinnati and at Baylor. I mean, that's a team that could very well end up 10-2. And you look back and say, boy, that was a good quality win by Penn State. So I think in many ways, actually, the season is playing out very favorably to Penn State in terms of building that resume. And I guess it does come into play, if Penn State does go 1-1 against Ohio State and Michigan and ends up 11-1, I do think that overall strength of schedule is going to be a strong point for Penn State to be able to try to at least make its case for being a playoff team, even if it's not in the Big Ten championship game.
I'm going to use that to segue into a conversation we started a couple days ago, Jeff. Stay tuned for that.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State bye week and what's going on in the rest of college football. We talked about the Big Ten, with Ohio State's win over Maryland. We had Iowa conversation. Iowa is a very sneaky 5-1 right now with a shot at winning the Big Ten West. And Jeff, you brought up a great point about West Virginia and where their record is. They only have one loss. It's the loss to Penn State. And you look forward to the rest of their schedule, and the only obvious loss on that schedule is Oklahoma. Now, a couple days ago, we were having the conversation about going from a 4-team playoff to a 12-team playoff and what it will look like. And when you start comparing teams from, say, the ACC or the Big 12 to a Southeast Conference or Big 10 team, West Virginia and their schedule provides us a great example there. you talk about Oklahoma being their one predicted loss the rest of the way. How about if you take Oklahoma out of that conference and Texas? All of a sudden, what does that look like with a West Virginia team that we saw opening day? And I don't think we were all that impressed with them, but that could end up being a one-loss West Virginia team if Oklahoma and Texas are out of that conference. Meanwhile, you have Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State and Oregon and USC and Washington. That gauntlet in the Big Ten, and I could do the same thing with the Southeast Conference and their number of good teams. Are you going to have a one-loss West Virginia team in the playoff ahead of a two- or three-loss team in the Big Ten?
Well, I'll do you even one better, because what about the hype train that will be Colorado next year? And if Colorado goes 11-1, right against a, you know, it's not going to be an easy, I don't want to make it sound like it's a cakewalk in the Big 12, but certainly nobody is going to look at those schedules and compare them to the Big 10 and the SEC and say, oh yeah, no, that's clearly an equally challenging schedule. So yeah, if Colorado with all of its hype goes 11-1 and, you know, doesn't have what you would call a significant win over like a top 10 team. And, you know, let's say a Penn State is sitting there at even 9-3 with three close losses to teams that are all in the top 10. I do think it's going to be one of the real challenges with the new committee next year with the playoffs is figuring out how you actually determine who the best teams are, because it obviously can't be just record, but to what degree do you rate, again, losing a really difficult game versus breezing to a victory over a team that you should be beating? And I just think it is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. My guess is at the end of the day, again, I think the Big Ten and the SEC are going to be the big benefactors. And I think my expectation is that both of those conferences will pretty regularly have four teams in the new playoff field. And I do think there will be occasions where they have five and even six teams from one conference or the other in the playoffs in a particular year. And I think at the end of the day, it'll be deserved. I think it'll be justified.
I think it will be too, but I'm telling you, for a committee that has for so many years picked out teams based on, look, you lose the second game, you're out. I think the temptation will still be great to be, maybe the standard becomes three losses and you're out. And it will cause a dilemma. There's going to be some arguments there, Jeff, many more than we've currently had with the four-team playoff is my prediction.
Yeah. And the one thing that I'm worried about, Jim, is I mean, we've already seen it for a number of years, but I'm worried that even more so you're going to see, in particular, the Big Ten and the SEC say, yeah, we want three non-conference games that are wins, and really try to schedule that rather than, hey, let's try to get a big test and, you know, get the fans excited about a particular matchup. Because I do think at the end of the day, you're better off especially, again, if you're in the SEC or the Big Ten, where you know you're going to get credit for the conference schedule and that it's not going to hurt you not playing a major, you know, contending team from another conference early in the season. You know, I'm afraid the fans ultimately lose out in terms of getting some of the fun inter-conference matchups that we're accustomed to seeing. I'm afraid that's going to even more than it has been go by the wayside.
Well, I hear you, but I also think in the Big Ten itself, if you look at Penn State's schedule, and we might do that a little bit closer later in the show, but when you add Washington, Oregon, USC, and UCLA to the mix, those will feel like the big out-of-conference games, at least initially. And they will have at least one of those teams every season, Jeff.
Yes. No, I for sure. I just, again, overall, I just, as a fan, I like watching those big matchups that that you get. And, you know, it's just different sports have different areas that are their strengths. But, I mean, it's one of the great things I think about college basketball is you get all of those early season and holiday tournaments where you get just those fantastic matchups with, you know, like a North Carolina and Kansas or whatever it is. Yeah. And you don't get that a lot in college football. And I just think we're going to get it less and less. And yeah, at the end of the day, I think the fans are still going to come. The conferences are still going to be flexing their muscle. I personally like getting more of those matchups that get you fired up. And yeah, I want to see a, you know, Florida State and USC or a Penn State and a Texas. I mean, those are the matchups that I think are fun. And listen, at the end of the day, we'll probably be getting those in the college football playoffs with the expanded playoffs. So that's fine too. I just, I like those early season matchups that get you excited about what is happening across college football.
I understand. And Penn State had, and they weren't even great teams, but still playing West Virginia, playing Auburn the last couple of years out of conference made the out of conference schedule a lot more interesting. And you're probably right. We're not going to be seeing those kind of games. Jeff, we, in talking about West Virginia, got us talking Big 12. The Big 12 game this weekend was Texas and Oklahoma. My takeaway from that is, boy, they're still Big 12 teams. That was still a Big 12 kind of game. And it was a lot of fun to watch.
Wildly entertaining. I mean, that was a game that had a little bit of everything in it. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, obviously, it's a great story from Oklahoma's perspective. You get waxed 49-0 a year ago. You get your quarterback back this year, and obviously he is a big difference maker, and you find a way to win. It's obviously got to be a great feeling within that Oklahoma locker room and the Oklahoma fan base to have that performance coming off of last year's run. And, you know, this is where, again, I think we get into the now everybody's like, well, Oklahoma's in there, that they'll run the table. We'll wait and see. It is a lot different once you get the bullseye firmly on you. And while I think Oklahoma, all credit, I think they put together a very good, at least offensive game plan and got it done against Texas, I think that is a pretty vulnerable football team. And count me among those that'll be surprised, actually, if they end up undefeated on the season. I just think, again, there's not that much separation in any of these conferences between the top team or the top team or two and the rest of the field. And I just think it's unlikely that Oklahoma doesn't have a day where it's a little off and somebody doesn't take advantage of it.
And the new format where it's the two best teams in the conference that will play in the championship game, we might be getting part two of Texas-Oklahoma, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my expectation right now. Obviously, a lot remains to be seen on how the rest of the season plays out. But I do think, listen, those are two good football teams for sure. And it was a wildly entertaining show they put on Saturday.
Well, that is, of course, unless West Virginia sneaks into the top two out there, Jeff, it could happen. Another big game was Notre Dame at Louisville. Also, it was entertaining. And that crowd at Louisville, they were over the top for this game. And I feel like that made a difference. But here's this great Notre Dame team again, and that's loss number two.
Yeah, and I mean, it was an amazing atmosphere at Louisville. That was also just fun to watch. And listen, I do love watching Notre Dame lose, but I really do like Freeman. He is just such a I root for him to have personal success, and I don't know how you do that when you're rooting against the school as strongly as I do, Notre Dame. But I do like him, and I do like his coaching style. But yeah, as a long time Notre Dame hater, I was thrilled to see the Fighting Irish go down. And even more so, Jim, because now I can root full throttle for Notre Dame to take care of USC and start helping out Penn State in other regards the rest of the season here. So go Irish this week. Thought USC was going to go down last night the way that game, or Saturday night, the way that game was playing out as well. You know, that is one of the things with conference play. It's why I don't chalk up Oklahoma running the table here. You know, that's an Arizona team that has lost a couple of heartbreakers here within the conference. And, I mean, they really did have USC on the ropes, and you do give credit to USC pulling it out. But I think that USC-Notre Dame game actually becomes more intriguing with Notre Dame's loss and USC's close victory now this coming week.
Very good, Jeff. That's going to have to be it for quarter number two. Stick around. We still have a lot more college football to talk about.
Hey, guys. This is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking the world of college football this weekend without Penn State playing a game, but a lot of interesting things going on, Jeff. When we finished up, we were talking about Notre Dame. They ended up losing to Louisville, their second loss. Meanwhile, Texas got their first loss against Oklahoma. It just leads me, tying those two teams together, at what point does Notre Dame and Texas stop getting the benefit of the doubt? You know, it's become a cliche. Okay, Texas is now back. You could say the same thing for Notre Dame. It's every year, you know, those high expectations. Last year, I think so many people hate Brian Kelly, and Marcus Freeman is a likable guy. They really wanted them to do well last year. They, of course, lost some games that were unforgivable early. And yep, it was the same thing going in this year, even after, you know, they played a very good game against Ohio State but lost. Now they, you know, have a second loss. When will it ever stop? I don't think it will.
It won't. It won't. And especially in Texas's case, I mean, the move to the SEC just guarantees an even larger benefit of the doubt moving forward. And Notre Dame, I think, is always going to get that that benefit of the doubt. And listen, I think Notre Dame still is a really good team this year. Maybe not a national championship caliber team, but I think that is a really good team. And I think Texas has a really good team this year. And I do think, again, both of those coaches are good coaches. But there's a lot of really good teams and a lot of really good coaches out there. And I just think, you know, those two will continue to get the benefit of the doubt moving forward. But I think, you know, certainly in the case of Notre Dame, at least in terms of national title consideration, I think we're done for this year with that that conversation. But I could be wrong.
I'm telling you, two losses, Jeff, they're eliminated. Okay, that's what happened.
I think so.
That's it. Louisville, we talked about a bit, their win over Notre Dame, a great win for them, great win for Louisville, great win for the ACC. You know, you want to see another team be a factor there because, again, ACC, Big 12, they're going to have trouble coming up with strength of schedule. But they also don't do themselves any favors with looking ahead. Louisville, they do not play Clemson. They do not play Florida State. They do not play North Carolina.
I did see that. I mean, that does not make any sense, right? I mean, it's obviously, I think if you're a Louisville fan, I guess you're kind of happy about that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's no way to dictate it. It just feels like over, like I do think the Big Ten has the right approach. Over a four-year period, even with the 18 teams, you're going to face everybody in the conference. Like throughout your college career, if you're in a conference, you know, and you're there for 4 or 5 years, like you ought to be facing, you ought to at least have some familiarity with all of the other teams in your conference. That doesn't seem like all that much to ask for. And yet that is not the case, certainly in the SEC and obviously here in the ACC as well. And obviously it's not a situation where they're trying to bolster up Louisville necessarily in this particular case. It's just, it's bizarre how that schedule has worked out as favorably for them as it has. Real quickly, I just wanted to go back to Jim and just, can I tell you that great atmosphere at Louisville, and you touched on the dislike, I'll try to put it mildly, dislike that I have for Brian Kelly. What a great atmosphere at Missouri, and that game was set up for Missouri to win it, and doggone it, Missouri, finish it off. Help a brother out. Send Brian Kelly home with miserable thoughts. And doggone, that was one of the games that just really frustrated me on Saturday because it just seemed so well set up for Missouri to pull that one out. And boy, what a wild back and forth game that was, though.
Do you know what I appreciate, though, Jeff, is the passion and the emotion, even if it's a negative one. I don't like Brian Kelly. I mean, I just don't. I'm with you on it. And I know hate is such a strong and ugly word, so I'm replacing it with dislike. He is so unlikable, and it does make it easier to root for somebody else, and it makes the game a lot more fun to watch. Because you have that with Brian Kelly, and what I find fascinating, though, is how quickly fortunes change for a coach. When Brian Kelly went to LSU, and I was not the only one saying this, I thought that was a terrible hire. It's not a good fit. He's just not cut out for Southeast Conference, LSU, the fake Southern accent that he used, just terrible, awful. Then LSU has a good season, beats Alabama, goes to the conference championship game. All of a sudden, the argument, hey, Brian Kelly, he's going to win a national championship at LSU. How quickly that has flipped. You could read a lot of things now about from LSU people. He's got to go.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me how quickly fate could turn. Could you imagine if Maryland had held on and beaten Ohio State, what they would have been saying about Ryan Day now? But there's an example with LSU, and you hit it. Why couldn't they have just held on? Anyway, there were several of these games that were fascinating, and I'll be honest, I wasn't awake for it. I saw Saturday night USC was down 17-0, Jeff, and end up pulling it out in multiple overtimes. Again, had to be a great game to watch, but is this could I lump USC in there with Notre Dame and Texas, where they are always given the benefit of the doubt, and then this kind of thing happens to them?
Yeah, and, you know, Arizona has just feels like kind of a snake bit team this year, too, where I think they're much better than their record. I think they're sub 500 now, right? And I think they're I mean, not a national title contending team, but I think they're a really good team. They've just had a couple of really tough games here. But yeah, USC does also seem to always get the benefit of the doubt. I am absolutely riveted, though, and will be fascinated to see how the Pac-12 plays out this year, because all of those teams are going to play each other. And obviously, if somebody gets through the Pac-12 this year unbeaten, then I don't think it'll happen. But man, you will have earned it, and by all means, you will belong in the college football playoffs, and probably ought to be the number one seed, even if Georgia or Michigan runs the table. If you're getting through all of the big boys in that conference this year, you truly have accomplished something.
Well, I'm with you. If they could get through undefeated, if there's an undefeated Pac-12 champion, yeah, I'm going to say it now. They should be the number one seed, because you do have, similar to the Big Ten, the best three teams I'm going to put out there as Oregon, Washington, and USC. They will each play each other, but even more so, however those three, however that plays out, if you go back to the Big Ten, they get to play Iowa or Wisconsin, the Big Ten East champion. In the Pac-12, they're going to have to play one of the other top teams again in that Pac-12 championship team. I can't imagine someone coming out of that undefeated.
No, and I think it's more likely that you're going to have three or four teams with one loss. And, you know, it's going to be kind of similar, I think, to the Big Ten East, the way that could play out, where – again, you're going to have a really good team and arguably a team deserving to be in the playoffs, not be in the Pac-12 championship game.
Well, where it's good, though, is by having that championship game, you might end up with two teams with one loss. You might have one team undefeated and one team with one loss. But it's going to be two deserving teams. In essence, it will be a play-in game for the playoffs.
Yes.
And yep. That's appropriate. And I think that's what people want to see.
For sure. And it's, you know, it is not unlike, you know, when you get these bowl tie-ins where it's like, man, you want to see, you know, the top two teams in the country play in a bowl game. You know, back again, obviously talking before the playoffs, and it's like, well, nope, these teams are locked in, and you end up with, you know, top ranked team in the country playing the ninth ranked team. It's like, well, this isn't what you want to see at the end of the season. And, you know, we've had that too often in the Big Ten, where it's like, yeah, it's the Big Ten championship game. Oh, great, man, Michigan and what? Iowa? what? Wisconsin? It's like, yeah, this is not the game that gets you all excited. And really, you know, it puts the East Division champion in a tough predicament too, because obviously the West champion is all fired up to have this opportunity. And it's just a no-win situation. If you win the game, it's like, well, yeah, no kidding. Of course, you're supposed to take care of that. And obviously, if you get upset, then it's somehow a huge mark against the conference as a whole, that at the top, those teams can't get the job done in the clutch. So, yeah, I strongly prefer having the top two teams in any conference meet for the championship at the end of the year rather than having those divisional champions meet.
All right, we got half a minute left, Jeff. I'm going to put you on the spot. Pac-12, Oregon, Washington, USC. Give me your pecking order out there.
I keep going back and forth on it, Jim. Washington is where I'm going to go. I'm going to land, which anybody who knows my predictions, you ought to go be putting all of your money on either Oregon or USC now. I like the makeup of that Washington team, and it's not that I don't. I think Oregon is actually the most complete team out of the three. I just don't think that they have I just don't trust Nick to be the elite quarterback in the clutch. Obviously, all three have terrific quarterbacks, but I just think Washington is the team that is ultimately going to come out on top. But truthfully, I mean, flip a coin between the three. There's strong reasons you could make an argument for any of those three being the team to beat.
Well, if it means anything, I agree with you. I would take Michael Penix over Bo Nix. I think that's the difference between those two teams. All right, Jeff, we got one more quarter to go. Stick around for that.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Jeff. We're talking college football in general. Jeff, we seem to have hit most every conference. Obviously, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, the Pac-12. Noticeable by their omission, the Southeast Conference. I think we saw Georgia finally play like the defending national champion.
I was really impressed. I thought Georgia would win that game, but I thought Kentucky would give them some problems with how physical Kentucky is up front. And that obviously was not the case. Georgia had its way up front. That is by far the most impressive Georgia has looked at any point this season. I'm telling you, Jim, I know Alabama is, you know, we talk about the teams that get the benefit of the doubt. Alabama is just under the radar right now, and they're just getting better and better, and they're figuring things out. Alabama is kind of, to me, like Ohio State is this year. Like, they're both good teams. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like there's been a huge drop-off and they're coming back to the rest of the field. It's just that nobody's going to argue that this is one of Nick Saban's best teams ever, and I don't think this is one of the great Ohio State teams. But count me among those that will not be surprised if Alabama and Ohio State are two of your four teams here at the end of the year. They're just those are teams and coaches and programs that seem to be able to figure it out. They get a little better as the season goes along. I do think that was Ohio State's best, at least half. That second half against Maryland was their best half of the season. And I think Texas A&M has figured some things out and is a much better team. I think the situation at quarterback has actually helped them. I think Brad Johnson's son there is the real deal, and I think is was a find here for Texas A&M. But Bama finds a way to win that game, and you look at the rest of Bama's schedule, and you know there's certainly the potential there for an additional loss, and I won't be shocked if they lose another game, but I also won't be surprised if they end up running the table and they're there with Georgia and they somehow figure out a way to get it done in that SEC championship game.
God forbid that happens though, Jeff. If Alabama has the one loss, goes in, beats Georgia, gives them one loss, and we have two Southeast Conference teams in the playoffs, I would go crazy. But I'm with you, this Alabama team and Ohio State, those teams are used to winning. They know how to win. And at the end of the day, you get an evenly matched Alabama and Texas A&M team playing each other. I just assume Alabama will find a way to win or Texas A&M will find a way to lose. You know, it's comparable, again, using Ohio State, Maryland. At the end of the day, Ohio State's still Ohio State. Maryland is still Maryland, you know. And A&M, that's another team. We know they bring in all the talent in the world. It's just doesn't feel like a winning group, Jeff.
Well, Jim, the problem there is Texas A&M just doesn't have the money to keep up with the big boys. I tried to say it with a straight face. I tried my best.
You did, but you just couldn't get away with it.
I couldn't pull it off.
I'll tell you what, Jeff, there was one other game that I wanted to talk about with you from over the weekend. I did not see it until Sunday morning. I read about it and saw some of the video from it, and that was Miami and Georgia Tech. Miami had the game won. They
Take
have
me.
Yes. What in the world are they thinking? Now, the one thought, the one conjecture was the running back was at 99 yards at the time, and they were trying to get him over 100 yards. And had he not fumbled the ball, given the ball back to Georgia Tech, who went down and scored a touchdown to win the game, no one would be talking about it. But how could these highly paid coaches, and I know things can get crazy on the sideline, but Jeff, and I've been talking about this for years, how come you do not have a coach standing by on the sideline whose only job is clock management? And he's got to be the one who at that point is able to whisper in the coach's ears, "Coach, take a knee, game's over."
Yeah.
How could you not do that?
You know, ESPN does those analytics. I didn't see, but it had to be with whatever it was, under a minute remaining. It had to be. Miami had to be a 99.99% chance of winning this game because, again, all they needed to do was take a knee a couple more times, and that game is over. Instead, they hand it off. They fumble, and even then, Jim, it's like, okay, well, now the only thing you can't do defensively is allow a receiver behind you. Just keep everything in front of you. Well, it was unbelievable. Like, two things that you absolutely cannot do at any level of football, right, is turn the ball over with less than a minute left when, again, all you need to do is take a knee. The game is over. They fumble, and then you turn around, and then the only cardinal sin you could do here defensively is let a receiver behind you. As long as you keep it in front of you, knock the ball down, you're good. And nope, they let the receiver behind them. He lofts the pass in there, and Georgia Tech wins, probably the most improbable victory of the entire season, and takes Miami definitively out of title contention here in 2023 as well. Just an absolutely bizarre ending to that game.
I'm glad you brought up that ending part where they gave up the pass. The receiver not only caught the, he was wide open behind the defense.
And not just behind the defense, Jim, like he is 10 yards clear of the defensive back. I mean, it's not like there's somebody there running stride for stride. And again, how Miami doesn't have at least three defensive backs basically starting in the end zone. It is inexplicable to me, almost as inexplicable as the fumble, is the fact that, you allow a receiver to get behind you and have that type of separation when, again, the only thing you can't allow is that. It was just unbelievable.
I can't recall which game it was, Jeff, where there was an end of the game kind of same process where a touchdown could beat you, the deep pass, and before the ball was snapped, the defense literally had six players lined up along the goal line. Six players.
Yeah.
You weren't going to get someone behind them. That could have been a fluke play, ball batted around a bit, but you weren't going to get a receiver beyond them. The other interesting thing with that fumble, Jeff, is this was not Mario Cristobal's first time doing this.
Yes.
Apparently at Oregon, it happened once before. I think it was against Stanford. Okay, it's one time. Maybe you get a little nonchalant about these things. But how could you have that burn you a second time?
Yeah, I mean, it truly is inexplicable to me. And I get mistakes happen, and, I'm not they probably are calling for his head in Miami. I'm not necessarily saying that, that he should be fired or anything. But, boy, that is just – I mean, that is coaching. I mean, this one is squarely on the coach's shoulders. And you can argue, well, the kid shouldn't fumble. Fine. But – why are you putting yourself in a position where you are? Again, there was zero risk needed, and you put a risk there that didn't need to be done. I mean, a lot of times I think coaches take the blame for losses that aren't actually just at least solely their fault. This one, I mean, I don't know how you don't put it squarely on Cristobal's shoulders. And, you know, again, as you said, the issue is that, and I didn't remember that. I mean, I was seeing the story on it, but it's like, yeah, this is the same thing that happened at Oregon. How you don't learn from, you know, that type of a mistake earlier in your career is that really is inexplicable.
And I saw one response from a Miami fan that if there's any time that you could do a firing for cause, this was it. And how he tried to phrase it the way that Michigan State did, you know, it brought dishonor and embarrassment to the university. And I'm like, yeah, I see the fit there, Jeff.
At the end of the day, yep, good case could be made.
Anyway, and finally, the one last note. I don't know if you saw this. The NCAA, speaking of taking a knee, the NCAA came out and said Penn State last week, the Bo Prabhula touchdown pass to Trey Potts, there should have been a flag on the play for faking taking a knee.
Well, it's just good to see the NCAA stepping up and taking on its strong leadership role that it holds in intercollegiate athletics and holding people accountable, because certainly that is what the NCAA is well known for. Listen, at the end of the day, I mean, I think they're right. I think, again, I didn't know about the rule, but I don't think there's any question. We actually got into a bit of a debate up here. When you go back and look at it, I don't think it was a design play where Penn State's been working on that in practice. Hey, fake the knee and then throw. I think he did it kind of on his own in a spur of the moment thing, but I just don't buy, and there are friends of mine, they're like, no, he was just trying to sell the run up the middle. You just don't, it was a lunge forward where you're getting your knee a couple of inches. I don't think that's what he was doing. And I think it's very apparent that that wasn't the case. But yes, for the NCAA to weigh in on that and not weigh in on some of the other things that have been occurring in intercollegiate athletics is fairly amusing, at least to this end of it.
I saw, and with this announcement, I saw a different angle that I had seen before where I could at least, I've always been saying I thought he faked taking the knee, and I still think he did, and I think he did it on his own. But I think it's the kind of call where you better make darn sure that's what he's doing, especially when the team is not in victory formation. You know, the play wasn't designed to, oh, we're going to fool the defense into thinking we're taking a knee. So I did see a different angle where it did look more like it was an exaggerated step forward as if he were going to run the ball. But I think he faked going to a knee, but I don't think you could call it, Jeff. That's my bottom line. And that's going to have to be the last word as we're running out of time. Thanks, Jeff, and thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.